Welcome to the CineScare Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And, of course, as always, joining us once again, all the way from Chicago, Illinois, Illinois is Mark Piscati.
Thanks for having me on, and I'm happy to talk about horror films.
Are you doing your NPR voice, Mark?
You gave me shit last episode about doing the languages. And
No, I thought that was wonderful. And actually, and then it wasn't until after the show I realized what you were doing, and that was because we found out that we actually have a sizable audience in Brussels, Belgium, right?
Belgium.
Yeah, Belgium, which is very bizarre. I don't know if there's any other European countries, but we have a not zero audience in Belgium.
We couldn't have said that a year ago.
No,
we couldn't have. In fact, I don't know, a year ago, we might not have been able to say it anywhere. I believe we are at our one-year mark, aren't we, Joe?
We are at, this is episode 26, and every 2 weeks we've recorded an episode without falter. That's,
you know,
52
what?
Episodes.
Actually, but it's we're not, I think the first
episode.
It's not
episode, the one-year anniversary yet. Though.
Yeah. The first episode was October 5th, if I'm not mistaken, so. We still have a couple weeks left.
Yeah, we got, yeah.
So are you guys going to, when you hit your one-year mark, are you guys going to go to season two and then episode one, or are you going to keep on continuing?
No.
Boy,
I had read about that, and they said, unless there's a thematic reason to do more, this is not anything anybody wants to hear, but unless there's a thematic reason to change to season two, Just keep going with the count.
Well, now that's interesting. Maybe we do change up the format, and CineScare Season 2 is the comedy horror podcast, where we just talk about comedies for like a year. And then the year after that, we'll go to like French films. You know, we'll hit the whole gamut.
There will be blood.
What do we change the name to? Cine Comedy?
Sure.
Cine Comedy.
Yeah.
It sounds like a cereal.
Yeah.
Sci-fi scare.
Well, I do want to say also that, well, now I don't remember what I was going to say, so never mind. But
it's insignificant.
It is insignificant. But I do want to get into what we've been watching recently, because we want to dive into our theme this week, which is, of course, Psycho. But first, there is at least one movie that we all watched, and that was Malignant, right?
Yes.
I watched it twice, actually.
Did you really? Oh, you liked it that
much?
Yeah. I watched it.
I didn't like it that much. I just watched it twice.
No. Oh. Why did you choose to watch it twice if you didn't like it that much?
I watched it once on my own, and then my family were like, oh, look, there's a new movie on HBO Max. And I'm like, all right, go ahead, put it on. And I just sat there quietly and rewatched it. And I will say it was kind of interesting watching it the second time, knowing what happens.
Yeah.
Looking for flaws, if you will. But
well, I watched it the first time, and it was really late at night. And normally on here, I make fun of my wife for falling asleep during movies. But this time I was dozing off towards the end because it was getting late, and it had been a long day. Our son had played a football game that day. It was Friday. And so it was just really late. And so I fell asleep the last probably 20 minutes. I kept dozing off. So the next morning I watched probably the last third of the movie again. And I'm glad I did, because I had a much greater appreciation for it. It was hard for me to get an appreciation when you're dozing off. And, you know, some scenes are the actual scene of the movie, and other scenes Fozzie Bear is in there, you know. So it's a completely different movie when you're dreaming part of it. But
when you take out the Muppets entirely, it's a totally different film.
This is way different than what I dreamed, what I watched last night. But I liked it. I thought it was I didn't love it, but I thought it was.
Let's synopsize this.
Okay, go ahead.
For our listeners, yeah. So this is a James Wan. James Wan, yeah. James Wan film. It is a film called Malignant, just came out in theaters and on HBO Max. It's kind of a murder mystery. This woman is being terrorized by some sort of entity, if you will. With her, started off, her husband was being threatened by this entity as well. And then various other people in her life are also being threatened and killed by this entity. And the cops are involved. It's sort of a whodunit. And laughter, of course, ensues, and lots of blood, lots of gore. And I can't tell you any more than that because I'm afraid I will give away the hidden meaning of who our entity is. But it's a thriller. Many would say this is a giallo type homage of a film, and it was okay. I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely a little giallo, a little Cronenberg even.
Yeah,
that, you know, it sort of had a mixture of both of those things. I didn't think it did either of them that well, but it was interesting, and I definitely thought the third act went bonkers in a really good way. Like, I really enjoyed it. Mark, what did you think?
Yeah, well, it's a self-aware horror flick with a hell of a third act. I mean 24 minutes into this film, James Wan did this great with this shot of the camera, like, up above the house. You guys remember?
I did love that. Yeah, that was a tremendous amount of cinematography.
What a beautiful shot of her just walking through her own house, and you can see the different levels of the house and her walking up the stairs. And I was going, oh, I really hope they incorporate this again. And they, unfortunately, they didn't. But what an incredible third act this was. I was actually, just like you guys, I was a little bored. I'm going, what the hell am I watching? What the hell am I watching? It had an 80s, 90s feel to this, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I was, of course, I was involved throughout the whole movie, but I was going, I'm not going to check out. I know that you guys watched the movie, and I heard a little bit of your opinions. So I waited, and then the third act happened, and we're in a prison or a jail cell. And my mouth went ear to ear with a grin. And I started giggling. I started laughing. And what a reveal. What a reveal. And I was going, the first two halves of the movie was okay. It was okay.
The first two halves would be the entire film.
Entire film.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, the first half of the film was okay, but when we get to the third act was fantastic, and I was having a blast.
I really enjoyed the first two fifths of the film.
God,
the third fifth was slightly askew, and of course, the fifth, with almost Wanda Sykes in this film, I was not a fan of.
Yeah, I like the first half. The second half was good. The third half was great.
You don't want to miss.
Well, we can't talk about it. We can't talk about it.
But we can do simple math.
Well, I can't do math. You guys know that.
We should get the pizza pie chart out for him.
Maybe instead of a pizza pie, we do the CineScare logo. You know, the saw blade thing.
Oh, that would work.
We show him what halves are. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he could do three blades and a third.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I just say one line out of the film? It's not a spoiler, but when someone says, we need backup, send the National fucking Guard, and I think you guys know where that happened, I started busting out laughing. What a great scene. In the police station?
Was that uttered by almost Wanda Sykes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, now it had a lot of really cool little things in it. It definitely leaned into the campiness at times, but almost not enough for it to be as campy as I wanted it to be. You know, it was still, it sort of walked a fine line between playing into the campiness and taking itself fairly seriously, and I didn't think that worked all the time. So it was almost like they were like, we can't have this be too of a kitschy kind of film because we want it to be a big blockbuster, not an art house film. And so I felt like they were kind of – I bet, and I could be wrong, but I bet there was a bit of a tug of war between Juan and the production company or whatever on the tone of the film. I could be wrong. Maybe he was all on board on that and just wanted a touch of campiness. But a little more, I think it would have suited it.
Is it time for trivia?
No. Oh, God.
So I think we can all say – can we say that?
Can we?
Can we?
Can we say that this film is CineScare certified?
Yes.
No.
No.
You don't think so?
No?
I mean,
you're not giving it thumbs up.
Yeah. All right. Fine. I'll give it a thumbs up.
Well, no,
I
mean, No. I feel like we're pressuring Joe.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, do we have a higher standard for CineScare certified than just the three of us liking a movie? Does it also have to be something we really liked or loved or something like that?
I would think it should be something we really liked or really loved. I'm just kind of tepid about this one.
Yeah, me fine. Too. Me too.
Yeah, I guess I was too. I mean, I think we can all recommend this, but I don't know that I'd say it was certified. And I do know that there's mixed opinions about this film out there. If you've been online,
and I will say this for the consideration of editing, the ending is really over melodramatic.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very good. Yes.
Sickeningly melodramatic.
I would say it was too. Yeah. And that's why I'm saying if it had been it, that might have landed a little better if it had been a little campier up to that point, but.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I kind of feel like there's two scenes that I'm just overjoyed about. It doesn't make the whole film. Yeah, you're right, Joe. You're right. It's just two scenes.
I mean,
three scenes.
I know a lot of people were really blown away by the ending and the last act and the reveal and everything. I felt like it barely earned that reveal, you know, but I don't know. I didn't have a strong opinion about the movie when I went back and watched the last act again after, you know, when I was awake. I did have a better appreciation for it, and I liked the ending and how they did all of that and the reveal and what came after I enjoyed. But yeah, the ending got a bit much.
Okay, let me ask you this. After seeing this movie, did you want to go run and tell other people you got to go see this film?
Yes.
Okay, so Matt said no. I wouldn't go run around and telling people they had to go see this film. No. That's why I'm saying it's not CineScare certified.
There are certain people I would tell, but generally people who aren't like major horror fans or big giallo fans or whatever, okay. Yeah. I probably would recommend it to those people. I probably wouldn't recommend it to people who aren't that into giallos or aren't major horror fans, you know.
I would just tell Mark to go see it.
Well, it's just such a good idea. It's such a great idea, and how they executed it at the end was so fun. Yeah. And it was so,
I agree with that. Yeah.
It was original, and it was just a 90s kind of, it was so much fun. It was just, there was no build up, and that's the problem.
Well, you know, and then that's what it really comes down to for me also, is that it was original, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not seeing anything else like this right now. You see a lot of remakes or reboots or things that you've kind of seen before. This was something I haven't seen a major release like this in a long time. It's always been lately, or the last 10 years, it's been A24 art house films or reboots or hauntings, and you haven't seen anything that really tries something very different. And I like that. I do tip my hat off to that. So if you are, I think if you're a big horror fan, you've got to see this. I mean, you probably already have if you're a big horror fan, but it is one that you definitely need to see. If you're not, you might not appreciate it. Okay, well, that's that. Well, it was actually a long segment of movies we've seen recently. but it was all about one movie.
it'll get shorter.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? Oh, yeah, that's true. It'll get a little shorter. But I will say, the fact that we talked about it this much does say something.
Yeah.
It does say something.
So, but our theme this week.
Wait.
What?
And that was Malignant.
Oh, that was Malignant. Yeah, Malignant. Thank you, Joe. Yes. Malignant. It was brought to our attention that we should say the names of the movies that we've talked about.
And maybe play a trailer or...
Hey, that would be
sound
fantastic.
Bites. Yeah, we should at least bookend every movie.
Yeah.
So
that people know, and it had been mentioned a couple times that when we talk about a movie, sometimes we don't mention the title again, and they're like, "What was this?" And they got to rewind. So we're trying to say the name of the movies after we have talked about them. So
we're listening to you.
And speaking of which, I challenge anyone out there that's listening to our podcast, try listening to it at half speed. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
How do you do that?
We sound drunk.
On your like Apple podcast playback, you can do like 1.5 times speed, you can do 2 times speed, but half speed, we sound so drunk on this podcast, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, I gotta try that.
That option is readily available. It says right there 1 times, yeah. And if you click it says 1.5 times, 2 times, or negative. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have the laugh, or I have the mentality of like a 4-year-old boy. This is hilarious.
Yeah.
What do I sound funny. Like?
We all God. Sound like we're really drunk.
Yeah.
Bad. God.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, that. Now we can begin the theme. I'm thinking that as you know, because I know you like to play the theme, Joe. So I'm going to leave this up to you. But I'm just my thought on it is that you would do not the music, but
the driving music.
Yeah. Yes. Or it's not really that, but something like
that. That sounds more like Wizard of Oz.
Or you could do like High Anxiety with Mel Brooks. Here's your paper.
were we supposed to watch that?
I don't think so. We could do the cab scene with what's his name, Paul Sorvino.
Son of a bitch. You guys aren't allowed to talk about that until you watch The Stuff.
Okay, we're gonna watch The Stuff.
Yeah, right.
Or Shocktober.
In Shocktober. Hey, I gotta fill 31 days. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so this week. Our theme is the classic Psycho and its subsequent franchise that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is probably the longest gap between a number one movie and number two movie of any franchise I can think of. I can't think of a sequel that came out 23 years later, right?
Yeah.
22 years later.
22 years. Well, 1960 was the original. When did
1983.
23 years later. That's 23.
But they say 22 years. Well, no, they say 22 years later in Psycho 2.
Oh, they do. Well, it's set, maybe. I guess I don't know. The movie. I don't know.
If IMDb, it's 1960, 1983. Simple math is 23 years.
But yeah, okay. Well, I'm wrong. In Psycho 2, they say 22 years all the time.
Maybe I did the math wrong.
It could be fractions and years. But Mark is muted, cursing at himself right now. Okay. It's okay, Mark. Don't worry about it. We're fine. This is what adds something. You are like the little pumpkin spice in my coffee right now, Mark. You really are. You add the little extra flavor that makes it.
You're not allowed to have pumpkin spice until October 1st. And
I refuse to go by that rule. And for A, I've never heard of that rule. And B, I refuse
that is
to go
a rule.
By it.
That is a rule. No, October 1st.
September. Not to mention, September 1st starts fall, according to Matt's calendar.
Yeah. And they're all releasing it at September. You're out of your mind.
I'm already buying Christmas ornaments.
Joe starts Christmas
ornaments.
Okay. So, obviously, the first movie, an absolute classic of film, right? One of the great films, not just of horror, but of any genre, and one of the great film directors of all time, Alfred Hitchcock, making a horror movie because he wanted, in part, to show what it would be like if a good director made a horror movie. Because by this time, if you recall, the context is that horror movies were B matinee movies, right? They were shown in the day. They were mostly geared toward teenage boys, and they were the domain of monsters and horrible special effects and zero budget, and all of the directors that hadn't quite made it or were past their prime.
Ed Wood,
and so here comes along Alfred Hitchcock, a revered director, a highly respected director, one who had already made a huge career for himself, and had just released North by Northwest, which was considered one of the breakthrough action films of the history of cinema, and at the time was a massive success for him. You'd think that he'd want to jump on the next, you know, train and of a similar nature and do that again. Instead, he makes a complete about face and takes on a subject matter that is one that people weren't comfortable with yet. Murder. I mean, there had been movies about murder, but actually showing it almost the, you know, kind of a precursor to the slasher film. Norman Bates is the great grandfather of Michael and Jason and Freddy and all of the 80s horror villains that we all have come to love and talk about.
You could say he's the great grandfather and great grandmother.
Joey.
You know,
that Joe. I shake my fist at him. There are some things in this film that even today I'm like, I'm shocked by that. I mean, not necessarily, yeah, we see more brutal and more, but thinking in context of 1960, the whole shower scene is pretty shocking, you know. And you and this is stuff that they didn't even have people who were married in TV shows sleeping in the same bed at this time, right? They either had separate beds, or somebody had to have their foot out of the bed or whatever those crazy rules were they had back then. And here comes along a movie where not only do they have this shower murder scene that is, you know, looks like a naked woman in the shower and a knife going in that looks like it's stabbing into her and knife, you know, stabbing sounds and blood, but it opens on an affair. Right, it opens on two unmarried people having an affair in a sleazy motel room, and a woman in her bra and slip. I mean, these are things that it's amazing it got passed by or that it was allowed.
Right? We get a toilet in this movie, and it's the first time in cinema history we actually see a toilet being flushed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe, what did you think?
That was a really nice toilet.
I didn't mean...
No, it's true, though.
I agree.
I didn't mean to put it in there like that, because it totally stunned Matt. He's like, okay, there we go.
Well, yeah, no, it the nicest toilet I've seen on film in 1960.
Yeah. It didn't stun me, but one of the trivia questions I've got has to do with that. So with the little trivia tidbits, try to streamline those, because I do have a trivia quiz for you guys at the end. So I know you've done your – I know Mark is right now about to pass out because he's probably done more research for this movie than any other. But be careful, because I do have a quiz coming.
Got it.
I'm sorry, Mark. Anyway, so what? Any thoughts that you guys have on this, Mark?
I would like to say that Anthony Perkins does a fantastic job in this film. He's a very likable, lovable. Yeah. You start to feel sorry for him. You almost feel like he was, you know, picked on in school. He's clearly a mama's boy. And I don't mean that as a joke, but he just, you know, he very socially awkward. I especially love just how endearing it is, like when he's trying to show Janet Leigh the bedroom, you know, the amenities that they have in this motel for the first time. He motions to the bathroom, is like, and then, you know, there's that.
Right.
He doesn't even want to say the word bathroom to this woman that he's clearly infatuated with. He did a tremendous job portraying himself as the most likable guy, the last person on earth you would ever think of that would just snap.
Right. And it was so natural too. Like it felt like it was him, you know.
Right.
It didn't feel like he was putting it on. I'll contrast that with the remake, the shot for shot remake with Vince Vaughn, and I didn't believe Vince Vaughn in those little moments. For one thing, those little moments, we've all seen them a million times. It would really be hard to portray that. But Vince Vaughn is playing against his type in this film, especially at that moment. Vince Vaughn, there was nobody hotter than Vince Vaughn at that moment because Swingers had come out. Yep. I don't know if he had already done the Jurassic Park one yet or not.
No,
but he was a hot commodity at that moment. Swingers was all over the place. But he's a cool guy. And Norman Bates is not a cool guy. He's awkward, like you said, and he's not, you know, he's not a ladies' man at all. Vince Vaughn is naturally a ladies' man. He's naturally a talker, naturally a social guy. He has to play against type to do it, and I didn't think he was successful.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was gonna say, it's like putting Tom Cruise in that position or Brad Pitt. You know, they couldn't pull it off.
Yeah, no, or you'd feel they were acting. You know what I mean? You'd feel them acting, and then you'd be aware of that the whole time, and you'd think, wow, this is a really great job of acting from him. But the moment you think that, you're kind of taken out of the story. You should, I mean, it's okay to think that once in a while, but to be thinking the whole time, I found myself just thinking of Vince Vaughn the whole time. Like, wow, this is a really hard part for him to play. And that's not good. Like, and I kind of felt like, I know we're getting onto the reboot here, but it's kind of hard to talk about one without the other on these two.
Yeah.
But I felt like Viggo Mortensen. I felt like if they had switched parts, it would have made more sense that if Vince Vaughn was had been Anne Heche's lover, and Viggo Mortensen, he has much more breadth as an actor. I think he could have played that creepiness in a different way from the way Anthony Perkins did it. I felt like Vince Vaughn was trying to do what Anthony Perkins did. He was trying to play the part in a similar way. I think Viggo probably would have been just as awkward, but in a more Viggo kind of way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, when I'm thinking about I mean, let's talk about the remake because it's the worst out of the whole franchise. But
I don't know about that.
But go ahead.
Well, no, Matt, you said that the remake was worse.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
No, I.
Okay. Well. Anyways, with Vince Vaughn, I mean, he was pretty much fresh off of Swingers, and then he's gets casted into Psycho with Gus Van Sant, who's a pretty well-known director for his art films and whatnot. What I did is with this franchise, I didn't watch it backwards like Joe. But I don't know if Joe did for this franchise.
I don't think he did for this one, right?
No, I didn't. No.
So what I did is I started with Psycho 2, Psycho 3, Psycho 4, and then I watched the remake, and then I watched the original. And watching the remake, I was actually kind of enjoying it. I was like, Anne Heche is actually okay. No, she's no Janet Leigh. She's no Janet Leigh. But she's okay in this film.
I agree with you, Mark. I liked her in this.
Yeah.
And I never really thought much about Anne Heche, but I really liked her in this.
Yeah. Julianne Moore did not like. She was too abrasive in this. And kind of butchy. Let me get my Walkman. Line was way out of like left field. And I'm like, ugh. But the remake is just, it is what it is. It didn't need to be done. There were rumors that Gus Van Sant said this was my chance to not make remakes for films, because he kind of did his shot for shot. It's not shot for shot, but it's pretty close.
It's close,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then he added in some shots of like a goat running down the road,
yeah,
or something like that. And,
yeah,
and a couple other things that came out. It almost seemed like he was trying to do a Natural Born Killers kind of thing or something like it. You know what I mean? Like he interspersed some footage that didn't make sense. And it didn't.
Even at the end, there were like butterflies or something like flying. And when he's trying to stab, and there was like just some white flashes when it was happening. Yeah.
I also don't remember hearing Norman Bates yanking his pud while he was watching Janet Leigh.
Yes.
That, yeah. I was like, really?
Did it need
we
to go
more
there?
Subtly just insinuate it? And I don't have to hear the sound effects, but maybe I'm just a stuck-up prude. Rita Wilson was fantastic in this, and so was Flea. That's all I have to say.
Oh, that's right. Flea was in it.
Who is Flea?
Flea at the hardware store. He was the clerk that actually works at the hardware store.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Because he was a huge fan, because Flea is a huge fan of Psycho, and he begged to be in this movie.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gus Van Sant was just coming off of Good Will Hunting, if I'm not mistaken, when he did this. And
it was right off. After Good Will Hunting, so he was hot off the presses.
Yeah, he was. He had just, I don't know if he had won an Academy Award, but that movie won a couple.
No, he didn't.
It won for best screenplay, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, and then
Robin Williams
won his Academy Award on it. And so Gus Van Sant could do whatever he wanted to do at that moment, and he chose to do this. And I don't think it was a necessary film at all, and I don't think it really added anything to... I don't know. I kind of go back and forth, because I know it's easy to get down on remakes and reboots or whatever, but when you're in theater, we never think twice about redoing a play that was done before, right? And so, or going on Broadway and seeing Les Mis for the sixth time and a different cast playing those parts. So, but for some reason, we tend to be a little more judgmental when it comes to film. I know they're different mediums, and there's a reason for that. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think it was a horrible idea. I just didn't think it was executed all that well. And then so in the end, it was like, well, that wasn't necessary. They didn't need to do that. And if it had been done well, we might have thought differently. But
I feel like we had to purge the remake. Because we jumped right on that. I feel like we had to purge. So let's get back to Psycho, right?
Well, I mean, part of the reason we jumped onto the remake is that, I mean, everything that could be said about Psycho has been said. That shower scene is iconic. The performances were incredible. What else do you have about the original?
Well, I have some things to say.
Okay, good.
Psycho is my favorite Hitchcock film.
We always take turns, for those of you out there, we always take turns deciding what the theme is going to be for our next movie. And this one was Mark's choice.
Yeah. 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 My mom got me hooked on Hitchcock. She's a pretty big fan of Hitchcock, but yeah.
And you have a pretty incredible collection of Hitchcock too, by the way.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Yeah, yeah. Thanks to my mom. It's my collection. It's my mom's collection, and I'm pretty proud of it. But what I love about this movie is that the empathy that I have for Norman Bates is that, and that has to be because of the brilliance of Anthony Perkins, like Joe said. Of his acting in this movie. Of course, Hitchcock had plenty to do with this, but honestly, I don't think I would have fallen in love with this movie so much if it wasn't for Anthony Perkins. I mean, the charisma that oozes out of Perkins is mesmerizing. I love watching Anthony's face with all his little slight tics, all the slight smiles, his fidgeting with his hands. He's so fun to watch. I mean, Janet Leigh, of course, is stunning. She captivates you. And I could just watch her drive in a car in black and white for about 24 hours straight and not get bored. No, she's that stunning. But when you think of Psycho, you just think of Psycho and not Psycho as a franchise. And, you know, they have five movies. I mean, that's like nobody really thinks of Psycho as a franchise. And with five movies, I mean, that's like Friday 13th is, you know, all the way to Part 5, A New Beginning. And that's a lot of movies. Quiet, Joe. I know you're thinking of something. I know you're coming up with a punchline. Easy. I just realized what I just said. But, I mean, that's a lot of movies. Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, that's a lot of films nobody, I think,
Part 5
talk
is played
about.
By, Part 5 is actually...
Roy!
It's actually the ambulance driver.
Yes. So, but, what a franchise it is. I mean, it has a TV series. What? Five
films. Yeah.
Five films. It has a TV series. Once was a pilot in 1987, completely failed. You guys are laughing at me. There's one that was a successful TV show called Bates Motel. They're both called Bates Motel, but the successful one was in 2013 and 2017.
I have to say I really liked the TV show.
As did I.
I watched the first six episodes, and I'm enjoying it very much so.
Yeah, I think it gets better as it goes, and the last season is, I thought, fantastic.
Matt, just so you know, I watched the failed co-pilot in 1987, and I have to say it's a little bit of a cross between a David Lynch and Alfred Hitchcock, and it's only one episode, so.
Really? Who's anybody in it that we would know?
No. Huh. No. So anyway,
where was this failed pilot? Where was it available?
I think it was.
I believe he said it was a co-pilot.
Oh, I did say co-pilot. It was a pilot. Damn it. Thanks, Joe. Yeah, okay.
So. You're welcome, Mark.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that one lost its pilot's license, so.
Son of layup. What's your favorite scene besides the shower scene in Psycho, guys?
Probably, for me... I would say
the reveal.
Well, yeah, I really liked two scenes, but I mean, there's so many, but I really liked the scene, of course, where they're eating in the parlor and that whole conversation. I thought it flowed so naturally. Again, I have to contrast it with the remake that I don't feel that conversation flowed naturally. And I felt like Norman's anger, Anthony Perkins, Norman's anger, grew and his discomfort with the conversation grew more naturally and organically to the point where he got to that, oh, so, you know, what's that line where he's talking about they're oh, so judgmental or something like that. But the remake, I felt like that conversation just didn't go anywhere. It kind of just came from nowhere. And Norman's anger, Vince Vaughn's anger seemed to just come from nowhere. Okay, so let's transition over to part two, because we are really starting to run out of time here before our trivia. But let's talk a little bit about part two, because and let's kind of squeeze two, three, and four together maybe if you want. But
it's gonna be
really,
pretty easy.
I think two is the one that everyone has said, yes, this is a really good sequel. They do a great job. And when I saw it, I really loved it. I thought, man, if you're going to do a sequel to this classic film 23 years later, that's kind of the way to do it. And then I think it was a year or two later, they came out with part three. And when I saw that, I did not like it in the theater, and I have not revisited it. I did not revisit it until just this last week. And I really liked part three. I know Joe didn't care for it, but having revisited it, I kind of appreciated it almost as much as part two. I really thought there's kind of a sleazy quality to it. Yeah. But I liked that. I kind of enjoyed that a little bit. I thought the story doesn't completely work. No, with the the daughter and the sister or whatever of Janet Leigh, you know, taking it upon themselves to try to drive him crazy or whatever. And then you've also got this other subplot in part two, right, with the mom doing stuff. So they both sort of had like this extra Norman killing going on in both of those movies that I thought was interesting. And I got to say, I really enjoyed it. I was kind of entertained by part three. And the first time I saw it, I didn't care for it. I kind of felt like that whole character of Duke and his whatever the girl that he had in the room and his whole date rapey thing that he had going on. I just didn't, you know, it turned me off. And I think it made me angry. And so I didn't give it enough of a chance. But this time I enjoyed it. Joe?
I think the reason why 3 doesn't work nearly as good as 2 is because 3 doesn't have anywhere near enough Robert Loggia and Dennis Franz.
Yeah.
I expect all of my movies, if I'm going to like them, they got to have some Dennis Franz and Robert Loggia on it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sweaty, it just doesn't work.
Sweaty Franz, baby.
Robert was so normal in part two, though. He was so, like, normal. He was just, like,
I
casual
love Robert
doctor.
Loggia.
He's great, especially
yeah,
when he starts
he is.
Yelling and screaming, all right. But
we've been watching, because my wife had never watched The Sopranos, so we've been watching that. And Robert
yeah.
Loggia is in a couple seasons, or
yep.
one season. And
we're watching
so
it, yeah.
bad and like, so nasty.
Not yep. okay!
But, yeah, no, for as much as I give him crap, I do love Dennis Franz's portrayal of Warren Toomey. I mean, he's the catalyst for all this stuff. He's,
oh, yeah.
you know, and he's just allowing this motel to just turn into the world's most seediest underbelly, you know, and he'll give rooms to anybody and allows yeah. local high school kids to sneak into Norman's basement and fool around while he's in prison.
Right. Well, and by the 80s, that would have been happening. You know what I mean?
It
makes
sure.
sense. You couldn't
yeah.
have it be just the way things were in 1960. Culture had changed. Life had changed. And any hotel on the outskirts of town on a, you know, a highway like that was going to be cheap, you know, stay motels rented by the hour. So it made sense that they did it that way. I thought it was I liked both of them.
Matt, if I could give you an assignment for the next time we record, I mean, we already know you do a phenomenal Sean Connery. If you could work on a Robert Loggia for us, that would be tremendous.
I will work on that.
If you could just start calling me a bum in Robert Loggia voice, that would be wonderful.
You
that
goddamn bum!
Yeah, that's good, Mark.
Yeah. It'll work.
What did you think of Anthony Perkins' performance in Psycho 2? I thought that some of his line deliveries were a little cheesy, like toasted cheesy, like what he likes to eat and what he likes he smells. I don't know. It seemed like it was a little hammy.
There was some times where he was speaking so quickly without tonality and fluctuation. It was almost like it was English as a second language class. It's like
yeah.
he just remembered vowels and threw them up out of his mouth like quickly. And
well, and Norman kind of has a cadence to the way he speaks and talks, mm-hmm. you know, and he has a certain cadence and there's a little bit of that went a long way in part two. I felt like he got caught up in that cadence of Norman and it seemed like very repetitive in the way he spoke. And I think it was almost like he rushed through his lines in certain parts. I feel like when, I believe when Duke came, or no, not Duke, because we're talking about part two, right?
Part two. Warren Toomey.
Yeah, I think Toomey. When he came in, I know he was in the office is when it struck me. He was talking to somebody in the office and his lines, it seemed like he was rushing.
Yeah.
But
Go ahead, Mark.
So I just want to get to Vera Miles, who reprised her role in Cycle 2. I thought that was just brilliant, bringing her back. And just with her and Meg Tilly. Oh, by the way, I have to say, last night I was going through YouTube doing a little research on Psycho, and I found that Meg Tilly has her own YouTube channel, And 4 days ago, literally 4 days ago, she did a live chat screening of Psycho 2. So I had to watch
Wow.
it. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, we probably could have had her for a guest. She doesn't have many people like watching her, like her show, and but she's such a sweet woman. But yeah.
My only question would have been, what's it like to work with Robert Loggia?
Right? That would have been fantastic.
And what if she worked with Paul Sorvino? I bet she
he's
did.
He's a legend.
I know. And he's a good tipper. So part four.
10%.
10%. But part four is a very unusual beast. Not only the story, its structure itself, but the way it was released, for one thing, it came out, it was a TV movie for all intents and purposes. It was shown on
Showtime.
Yeah. Right. But it's still basically a TV movie shown on Showtime. It is the kind of an odd idea behind it, and that was that if you have not seen Psycho 4, I don't necessarily recommend seeing it. I didn't think it was all that effective, although if you're a completist, you will. But the idea is there's a radio show where they have this expert on killers who killed their mothers, I think is what it was, right?
Yeah, psycho kill, you know, yeah.
Psycho
mattress
killer.
Side, yes. Mattress it was, side, they yeah. were discussing matricide, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Leo and, Richmond.
Right.
Who was in the first movie, the old guy at the radio station. He was playing a character in the first movie of the doctor explaining at the end why Norm Bates was doing what he was doing.
Oh,
that's okay. The same actor? Or same
no,
character?
No, same character. It wasn't the
oh,
same
okay.
actor.
Okay. Yeah, well, I didn't make that connection, but that's interesting that they did that. But this
that would have been a good trivia question.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been a good trivia question. Darn it. Of course, then it would have been spoiled. So yeah. Thankfully, it wasn't. But that guy is probably the worst like therapist that you could have though in the world, because he kept saying things to set Norman off. But anyway, there's a show and he's being interviewed on this radio show about people who've killed their mothers. And they ask for people who've killed their mother to call into the radio show at the beginning. I'm like, who's going to do that? For one, if you did it, you're in jail. You're not calling the radio station probably. Or you haven't been caught and you're not going to call the radio station. But of course, Norman calls. And it is basically just a plot device to get us to look back at how it all started. And so we see Henry Thomas playing Norman Bates.
Thomas from Elliot from E.T.
Elliot from E.T. playing Norman Bates. And this is the first time that he would take, I believe, the first time he would take on a role that was iconic. What was the second time? Do, 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 do.
He's in Suicide Kings. He's in All the Pretty Horses. He's in what?
This is a big one. It's a big iconic horror figure too. I'll give you 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Red Velvet?
No, it would be Dr. Sleep. He played Jack Nicholson's Jack Torrance character.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He was playing the bartender, but he was supposed to be Jack Torrance. And then later he shows up with the Jack Torrance outfit. I believe they were trying to get Jack Nicholson for it, but Jack Nicholson's in semi-retirement, so they had him do it instead. It would have been quite a reveal to have Jack Nicholson doing that, though.
That would have been
semi-retirement just means they didn't offer him enough money.
No,
probably. He hasn't done a movie since The Bucket List, so it's been quite some time.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Going out on a high note.
Yeah. So, I like Henry Thomas. I thought he did a pretty good job as
Norman.
He
did a great job, I thought.
I thought he did well. And Olivia Hussey playing Norman's mom.
What's biggest that? Problem. I've been waiting to hear the name Olivia Hussey because I cannot stand that woman in this movie.
She's kind of hot, Joe. She's kind of hot.
I will not disagree that at all.
Made me
she
feel
is,
bad.
She is gorgeous. However, her accent.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Why would they cast somebody with an outrageous accent like that when yeah. Norman's mother has been established with having no accent at all whatsoever in four films?
Yeah, that's true.
That was just dumb.
They probably just cast her because they got Olivia Hussey and they needed another name in it or something like that.
What other movies has she been in?
Well, she played Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, the like massive success 1960s Romeo and Juliet. She played.
Oh, that was her.
Yeah, that's what she's really known for. But she's been in a number of other things.
She was an Ice Cream Man.
With Clint Howard.
Yeah.
I don't remember her in that.
She played Nurse Wharton.
Okay.
Yeah, she's been in a number of things, but I get what you're saying about the accent, Joe. It didn't bother me that much, but now that you've said it, it really bothers me. So thanks a lot for that.
What really bothered me was John Landis is in this movie.
Yeah, I know.
I used to have the utmost respect for John Landis. Now
he's
He's
got such a big part in that, actually. He doesn't say much, but he's in it a lot. Mick Garris loves putting directors in his films for some reason.
Yeah.
But John Landis was in there a lot.
Well, I listened to Mick Garris's podcast, by the way, is Postmortem with Mick Garris. Fantastic podcast filled with horror directors he has on. Every other, like a couple times a month, I think they have episodes. But every other episode is Ask Mick Garris. It's like an AMA thing. They send in, people send in questions and he answers them. And he was talking about Psycho. And he said that apparently he had a real struggle on Psycho with Anthony Perkins because Anthony Perkins really wanted to direct it and they wouldn't let him direct it. And so he really gave Mick Garris a hard time. And then they kind of had a bit of a struggle. He tested him at every turn. They had a bit of a struggle, it sounds like. And Mick Garris wouldn't normally talk bad about anyone. So the fact that he was, it must have been pretty bad.
Yeah, well, coming off of Psycho 2, it's a little surprise that Perkins would eventually embrace being Norman Bates, although returning for the far less successful Psycho 3, Universal didn't give Perkins his back end, even though the movie made something like $90 million when the budget was $5 million. And so Perkins...
Which one is this?
This is after Psycho 2, so going into Psycho 3... Perkins threatened to sue them for not getting the back end. And then what happened was that the big top executives said, if you sue us, you know, you're never going to work in Hollywood again. And Perkins says, just laughed and said, yeah, until you need me again. And so, of course, when they came back to him for Psycho 3, his price for it was to direct a film. So, yeah, he probably has like a probably had a big chip on his shoulder going into Psycho 4 when Mick Garris was directing. So
yeah.
A little backstory on that.
Yeah.
That's probably why that happened.
Well, we are getting close to the end, and so I do want to, unless you guys had something else to say, I do want to go into our trivia.
I did just want to have a shout-out to Hugh Gillen, the guy that played Sheriff John Hunt in 2 and 3, because, you know,
yes,
based off of Drive-In Massacre. I love me some chubby cops.
Oh yeah.
Who don't do very much in their town.
Yeah.
And this guy was the epitome of just, well, you know, Norman's been a nice guy. I guess we'll just take him for his word and let him off the hook again.
He just wanted Norman to succeed, man. He just wanted sticking up for him.
The guy The guy had killed someone. And now people are coming in and saying, we think he killed someone else. And he's like, nah, what are the chances?
No. What proof do you got? Well, he did it once. No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I don't see that happening again.
No.
And boy, can he eat a sandwich.
Plus, I'm in my pajamas. But I do, the ending of part two, skip ahead like 30 seconds if you've not seen part two. But the ending of part two, I thought was fantastic. Killing the old lady and
propping her up
in there. That was a great shot, too. It was very Hitchcockian shot above the kitchen. I thought it was fantastic.
Best shovel kill in cinema history, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just what a wallop.
Yeah.
It's great.
All right. Well, that does it for Psycho.
Oh, God.
But I have put together, unbeknownst to my fellow CineScare people a trivia. Now, when I mentioned this today that I had a trivia for them, Joe bit my head off. Was it last night? Yeah, Joe
last
bit my head off about it.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Nobody said nothing about no trivia.
Yeah.
First time hearing of it. Yeah.
And I'm the worst at trivia.
That's why I did it, because it's fun.
And I don't want to be 0-3.
The fun comes in you not being very good at this, Mark. Okay, so
and me being completely unprepared.
And because that's the dagger in the side.
Okay,
this
one's not going to be that difficult.
Yeah,
right? I promise you, this is not a deep dive. None of us are super psycho fans. It's not like Friday the 13th with you or Halloween with me.
So it's not a conference game,
right?
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, now this one I think it's going to be doable for you.
Okay.
All right. Joe, whatever music you've got on there for Psycho Trivia.
Can you put in the music the Macho Man Savage intro if I win?
No.
Okay. Yeah, no. If he wins, Joe, do the saxophone song from the Lost Boys, please, for him.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool.
If I win, it will be the theme from I Dream of Jeannie.
Ooh, perfect. All right. Okay. So here we are to Psycho Trivia on the podcast CineScare, as Mark would say. Number one.
Coming to you live from Belgium.
Coming at you live from Belgium. Number one. How many rooms are at the Bates Motel?
Joe.
12. 12 it is. 12 it is. Oh, I
12 vacancies, 12 rooms.
Yep.
12 angry men.
Let me write this down. Mark, Joe.
We would have also accepted the answer a dozen.
Yeah. Not a baker's dozen, though, Joe.
No.
Number two. Who killed Bates Motel manager Toomey
Mark,
go ahead.
Oh, God, at the end, Mrs.
I need a name.
Pussy? Mrs. Pussy?
Nope. Joe?
Can you actually finish the question now so I can hear
Who killed Bates Motel manager Toomey, as well as a teenager in Psycho 2?
Is that Mrs. Spool?
Yes.
God damn, Pussy.
Good job,
Spool.
Joe. Pussy.
Pussy.
I was thinking of Spool. I couldn't think of Spool.
Is the Sopranos again?
Yeah. Don't send him to Joanne's to buy a spool of thread. The ladies there are going to be a little shocked.
Can I have a pussy of thread?
Can I have your biggest pussy?
Security.
Oh, ADD is a
Mark
bitch.
Gets hauled out of there. Number three. What is Norman's? I can't stop laughing about that now. Okay. What is Norman's favorite candy?
Mark.
Okay, Mark.
Candy corn.
Yeah.
Candy
Very
canes.
Very
candy
good.
Corn.
Candygram. Candy corn.
Number four. Sorry. According to Norman, what animal does Marion eat like?
Mark.
Joe.
Mark.
A bird.
Very good.
But what kind of bird?
A pussy.
Spotted pussy.
I said pussy. Okay.
You said pussy. Mark, you can go back and listen. I promise you it was
pussy.
I said pussy.
Number five. He's trying to mark. He tried to change it now. Okay, number five. What kind of melon was used to create the stabbing sound?
Joe.
Yes.
Joe. Cantaloupe.
No.
Mark.
Good.
Watermelon?
No. It's a cassava.
Cassava.
Number six. The score for Psycho consists entirely of which kind of instrument?
Mark.
Violin.
I I knew it.
Which kind of instrument?
Joe?
Yes. Joe.
Strings?
Strings. That is correct. It was not just violins. There were also cellos.
Cello.
Cello. Number seven. By the end of Psycho, what is Norman's confirmed body count?
Mark. Two.
Wrong.
Die.
Joe.
Yes.
I'm going to say three.
It is three.
Oh, I got one up. Every single trivia
Although,
I got one up.
It might, you could also make an argument for four, right? Because didn't he poison his mother and her lover? And then you got Marion, and then you've got the detective.
But I never saw him poison the lover.
Yeah, you never saw that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, confirmed. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so Joe, you get that.
So it was three.
Yeah.
Wait, so who was
it? And that's the end of trivia. And we're done now.
Number eight. Psycho was notorious for being the first movie to show these three images. Name all three. All right. Do you guys know it?
No, I give up.
Toilet.
Toilet flushing.
Naked woman.
Nope.
In the shower.
It would be toilet flushing, shower murder, and woman in a bra and slip.
Oh. Mm.
Number nine, in his cameo for Psycho, Hitchcock wore what kind of hat?
Mark?
Yes.
Bolo hat?
No.
Joe?
Yes.
Top hat?
It was a cowboy hat. Number 10, the opening scenes of Psycho are set in which city?
Mark.
Joe.
Boy, I think it's Mark.
That would be Phoenix, Arizona.
Very good.
Actually, we'll have to check the tape on that one.
In Psycho 3, what's the profession of the first character to die?
Mark.
Yes.
Oh, I jumped the gun. The first character to die or first profession to die?
First character to die. What was the profession of the first character to die?
Oh, she was a nun.
Yes. Number 12, what's the date at the beginning of Psycho?
Mark.
Yes.
Friday, December 11th?
Yes.
Killing it.
In which cemetery was Norman's mother supposed to be buried? What's the name of the cemetery? Oh. Any ideas?
No.
The Psycho Cemetery.
Green Lawn. Green Lawn. In Jaws, what is the profession or hobby of the man Quint says will have a heart attack when he sees what I brung him?
He was a fisherman.
Joe. Taxidermist.
Yep.
Oh, shit.
I slipped that one in.
Nice.
You see what I brung him?
Yeah. I slipped that one in because, of course, Norman is
taxidermy.
Does
yes.
Nice. Yeah. That was in, nice.
And actually, he just stuffs things.
Right. Well, he's a taxidermist, right?
Yeah, but I thought he said something about he just likes stuffing things.
Oh, well, that's true. In Halloween, John Carpenter gave a character the same last name as a character in Psycho. What is that last name?
That's not in my trivia. Say that again?
In Halloween, the movie, John Carpenter gave a character the same last name as a character in Psycho. Which name was that?
Joe. Yes. Joe. Loomis.
Yep.
Shit. Come on now. Oh, Mark. Come on. Get better.
What's number 16? What substance was used to simulate blood in the shower scene?
Mark.
Yes.
Corn syrup.
No.
What?
Joe.
Yeah.
Chocolate syrup?
Yep. Chocolate
syrup. How many questions are there?
21.
Wow.
Only at 21 if there's a tiebreaker. Let's see. Who directed the remake of Psycho?
Joe.
Mark.
Gus Van Sant.
Joe beat me on
that? I believe
that?
He did. We'll have to check the tape.
Check the tape.
What was Norman famously? What does Norman famously?
Joe.
Yes.
We all go a little crazy sometimes.
Joe, Mark, would you like me to finish the sentence?
Yes, please.
What does Norman famously like to serve his guests for dinner?
Sandwiches.
And?
Milk.
Very good. Guests of the original film would pay how much for a room at the Bates Motel?
Joe.
Yes.
$20.50?
No.
Mark?
Yeah.
$10.50?
No, it was $10.
Oh, I almost said 10.
20. What was the name of the guitar?
Wait, what?
Number 20. What was the name? Why are you laughing, Joe?
Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay. Number 20. What was the name of the guitar playing date raping drifter in Psycho 3?
Mark.
Mark.
What was the name or the actor?
The name of the character.
Oh, shit. The name of the actor is Jeff Fahey, but I don't.
Even that's wrong.
What?
It's Fahey.
Fahey, and his character's name is Dwayne Duke.
Yep. Duke. Oh, sorry, that was Joe's. And the bonus question.
Oh, are we tied?
This is no. Oh. Joe has 9, Mark has 6. This is good for 5 points.
Yes!
That's not a tiebreaker.
No, it's not a tiebreaker. But just for kicks and giggles, which famous director played radio station manager Mike Calvecchio
Joe,
in Psycho 4?
Joe.
Yes, Joe.
John Landis.
John Landis. Joe wins 10-6.
Wait,
did
I thought
really
I was
get
in the
10
lead.
Right?
Yeah, I thought I was in the lead.
Because you're a loser. No, you've always been a loser.
Wow.
10-6. Yeah.
I didn't even watch these films.
Yeah. Mark. It's okay, Mark.
I dream a genie now.
Can you do the little oh no, that's Bewitched. I like the little thing when she winks at me.
Oh.
That's Bewitched.
Sorry. Yeah.
Maybe I'll work that in somewhere.
I was more of a Bewitched man myself.
Yeah.
All right. Well, people, we've done it again, and we are now fast approaching October, the Shocktober. The next episode will be released on October 1st, and we've already got our theme ready, and it's one that I got to pick, and it's one that I've been waiting for this moment to pick, and it is hauntings. Or is it just haunted houses, or is it a ghost thing? Is it ghosts?
I don't know. It's your call.
Oh, yeah.
I think you kind of got to specify because
could it be things that are just haunted? Because you like Christine, the haunted Stephen
car.
King.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't really, it was a possessed car, though. It wasn't really a haunted car,
right? Yeah,
is there a difference?
Well, hauntings are ghosts and possessions are demons, right?
No. Okay.
Wait, so what's the topic?
Hauntings.
Hauntings.
Yeah, how about hauntings?
Why don't we just do haunted houses?
Okay,
yeah, let's do
haunted
houses.
All right, haunted houses. Yeah. There is a fine line because you could say that The Conjuring is sort of a demonic thing too, but let's just say, I'm going to say that's a haunted house film.
It's like Amityville Horror?
Amityville Horror would be.
Okay.
Ooh, Horror in 3D.
Burnt Offerings. Actually, I was looking on Shudder and The Haunting is on there. Any of you guys out there who are listening to us, next couple of weeks, watch a few haunted house movies yourselves. So,
give us some ideas.
Yeah, give us some ideas. Also, want to remind people, please like us on or give us 5 stars or 4 stars or whatever on Apple Podcasts. Those things help out a lot. And as always, go to www.cinescarehorror.com and purchase our shirts. And be on the lookout for any sales coming up too, because we just had a big Labor Day sale where they were selling our t-shirts for like $15 each. I grabbed one myself.
Wow.
Yeah. And nice. I got the
bargain
Cinescare production one.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, I highly suggest you go check out our shirts and our merchandise, and it will also help to support your favorite podcast. We don't do Patreon, and we don't charge for bonus episodes. All we ask is that you go and buy a little merch once in a while.
Yeah.
And the phone cases are fantastic, too, by the way. I can vouch for that. So, all right. Well, that'll be it for this time. And next time we see you, it will officially, according to the calendar, be fall. And it will be officially October. So, Joe, did you have something to say?
No.
No,
I don't.
You kind of lean forward like you got something.
Nah, he's just grinning because he won again.
Yeah, he is. He's gloating right now.
I've got I Dream a Genie going through my head right now.
Perfect. All right, everybody. We will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Just so you know, I watched the failed co-pilot.